have some guests for you today that I think you are going to thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy. There's a new book out which is called N is for Never Forget, and it's POWs, MIAs from A to Z. And the two guests that I'm welcoming today is, first of all, the gentleman who illustrated this book, and his name is Paul Dillon. Good morning, Paul.
Hi, morning, Kathy.
It's great to have you here.
It's good to be back. Good to see you.
Oh, it's good to see you. And you brought your cheerleader, confidant, champion, mentor,
the brains,
a.k.a. wife,
the brains,
Bunny.
Yeah.
Good morning, Bunny.
Oh, good morning, Kathy.
Great to have you here. And it's a tremendous, tremendous endeavor that you have done here with N is for Never Forget. And, of course, the book was written by Nancy Paulette, who could not join us this morning. But Paul is the illustrator on this. And it's all about A to Z of what POWs go through.
Yes.
Can and, you explain this more to us?
Well, it's the book was written by Nancy Paulette, and it's
Sorry, I mispronounced it.
And it's just a child-friendly view of the POW MIA legacy. It's a, kind of a tough subject to broach with kids. And Nancy has a talent or a gift of taking difficult subjects and then making them accessible for children and actually interesting reading for everyone.
Yeah.
And we weren't aware of any particular children's book addressing the POW MIA topic. Again, it's kind of a difficult thing to can be a difficult subject, but Nancy did a really good job. We think it's important that you know, that the children kind of are aware of our prisoners of war and missing in action. And Nancy did a great job.
And the illustrations. Now, I haven't had a chance to really thumb through this book as much as I would like to yet, but it is beautiful. Even the cover piece is just gripping. Now, let's talk about, and I, when I introduced you, I failed to mention, I buried the lead here. Paul is the director of the Jefferson Barracks POW MIA Museum, in addition to being the illustrator of this book. And let's talk first about your military background and your father's experiences, and that will shed some light and inform why this book's being here in my hand.
Well, I am an Army veteran, but I'm not a combat veteran. Following basic training and AIT and jump school, I was stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. But my dad was another story. During World War II, his B-17 was shot down, and he wound up spending a year and 8 months as a prisoner of war in Stalag 17B, which was located near Krems, Austria. And I guess that's how I became involved, you know, with the POW and the MIA project there at Jefferson Barracks. And
well, it's been I've noticed over the years. But how many years ago was it now that you opened it? Was it 2014?
Well, the project actually began in 2011 with a letter from Congressman Carnahan to the Missouri's veterans groups. And the project was, with the help of Mr. Bill Florek and Mr. Stuart Symington, Jr., we were the project was incorporated in May of 2012. In December of 2012, the lease agreement with St. Louis County, who owns the building, was finalized with the stipulation that we restore the building to its original 1896 appearance and then renovate the interior into a modern museum. In January of 2013, we got the keys to the building, and then we dedicated the building on May 1st, 2013. In October of 2013, we were awarded a Port Authority grant, and then again in early 2014, we were awarded another Port Authority grant, and in January 2015, we began the restoration construction, restoration, renovation, construction, and it's ongoing now. It's still going, and we're hoping to have the first floor operational and usable by possibly spring of next year. Again, the building was built in 1896. Up until 2008, it had housed the Civilian Conservation Corps Museum. But from 2008 till when we got the keys in 2013, it was kind of unattended and needing in need of some tender, loving care. And so we have our work cut out for us, but it's an ideal location. We're right around the corner from the Missouri Civil War Museum, right across the street from the Jefferson Barracks Air and National Guard facility. So it's an ideal location for this particular project. And the idea is to have a place where every day is POW MIA Recognition Day, and we think that's an ideal spot for it.
Oh, I would agree with you. I would agree with you. And that it is a good location, and it's also something where if you're working with your children, you know, or taking your children to learn these things, the Civil War Museum, the POW, it all has such a good connection. It really is.
And there's so much history there at Jefferson Barracks, you know. It just oozes history. Yeah.
It really does. I don't think as many St. Louisans really realize the wealth of history that is associated with Jefferson Barracks.
Well, I think it was established, in 1826 as an outpost there on the Mississippi River, and has been operational ever since then. So, and it has been, I played a part in all of the conflicts, we've had, from then, from way back in the 1800s, the Civil War, World War II. And so even today, there are units there that are being deployed, in Iraq and Afghanistan. So it's an amazing place.
I think a lot of people aren't even aware of that, too, because, when we hear Jefferson Barracks, I think the first thing that comes to mind is probably the beautiful National Cemetery. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then a secondary is the medical facility.
Hospital, yeah.
And I really, now... We share some background, as military, but I think a lot of people just aren't aware of this being an active
base.
Well.
Yeah. And it's an amazing place. There are some amazing people in our history that have passed through, Jefferson Barracks. Some famous, generals and such that have all seemed to have funneled their way through there. So it's a lot of history, something very we ought to be proud of.
Yes, indeed, we should. Well, now, as this all came about, how did your background, tell us about your art background, I'll put it that way. Tell us about how you got to drawing and all that.
Well, actually, I'm a cartoonist and humorous illustrator, by training and by choice. So actually, Elva Risa Publishing and Nancy, they went out on a limb to ask me to do the book or to have me, try out to do it. I think probably because of my next of kin's American, next of kin member of the American ex-prisoners of war and a next of kin status, to a POW, and my involvement with the Jefferson Barracks POW MIA Museum, I think they kind of thought that kind of gave me an in to the topic and the subject matter. And a lot of the, I have had the honor of meeting a lot of the men and the women who were prisoners of war, and I've had the honor of meeting some of the family members of those who've had family members go missing in action. So it's been an honor for me, and I just I guess I'm very passionate about our POWs and our MIAs, as are a lot of people, and it's just was an opportunity for me to. I never served in combat, but this would be a chance for me possibly to make sure that those who did, the men and women who did and who sacrificed and endured so much, that they're remembered. And I think it's important that we tell these stories and keep telling these stories in order to preserve them. Mm-hmm. We don't want to lose them, from generation to generation. And hopefully with the book, it kind of introduces another generation to the service and the sacrifices that men and women have made and continue to make, for our freedoms, and that we can't take it for granted.
But I think it's just wonderful that you have taken these thoughts and been able to crystallize them and put them in a format where young people, this is middle school aged, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Where young people can get a further depth of understanding. When you were doing these illustrations, I know that you have a certain what's the word I want? Dedication to keeping the facts accurate and that sort of thing. So as you did these, some of these are actual sites that you illustrated and some are not.
I tried to reference, you know, historical photographs and drawings and stories and make them as accurate and as compelling as possible. I thought in order to be true to the story, to try and make it as accurate as I could. And I wanted each drawing to be a powerful, you know, powerful drawing. And of course, there's some things that, the Vietnam Wall. I've been there. I've been, you know, to the memorial. I've been to the World War II memorial, been to the Korean War memorial, and I've been to the Changing of the Guard, the Tomb of the Unknown. So, you know, I've been to those places, but some instances, some stories, like the Mike Christian flag, where he would sew the flag on the back of his shirt there while he was a prisoner of war in the Hanoi Hilton. I had to kind of guess what he might have used and what it might have looked like. So I did my best to try and keep it as accurate as I could. The justice page with the Nuremberg trials. You know, there's a lot of historical photographs, you know, with pertaining to that. So. You know, just to kind of stay as accurate as I could and try and make each drawing compelling and interesting.
And they really are. As I'm going through here, you've got the J for justice, of course, you just mentioned, K for Korean War veterans. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in B. Now, a lot of people may not know that story. B is for Blassie.
Oh,
would you
Mike
tell
Blassie.
That story?
Well, Mike Blassie, a St. Louisan, who was an Air Force A-37 Dragonfly pilot. He was shot down over South Vietnam in 1972. And it came that his remains eventually were in the Tomb of the Unknown. And after some time, the Blassie family, amazing family, and they found out information that the person in the Tomb of the Unknown could possibly be Mike. There was some strong evidence. And the Blassie family took this, and of course they jumped through all the hoops and they went through all the red tape. And after like 14 years, it was they finally were able to open the tomb, and sure enough, the remains belonged to Mike Blassie, and they were able to bring him home here to St. Jefferson Barracks, St. Louis, and he's buried out there now. But the Mike Blassie story, not only is Mike Blassie a hero, you know, sometimes heroes don't get medals. And the family, Judy, Mary, George, Pat, their effort to bring, you know, their brother home. You know, there was heroism in their action, and it was just kind of a neat story that it was the family who brought him home. And so I was hoping that was one of the stories that I was hoping that I had talked to Nancy about it and the editors there, that I was hoping that we would get that story in. And the story about Colonel Raglan, I think I told you about Colonel Raglan. And so I kind of lobbied Nancy and the editors that those stories, you know, are in the book.
Share with us also briefly the story of Colonel Raglan.
Colonel Dayton Raglan from Kansas City. Well, you know, we all know the story of the Tuskegee Airmen, and I think that the door that they opened for aviation, well, Colonel Raglan just kind of walked right through that door. And he's a young African-American fighter pilot in Korea as a young lieutenant. He was shot down, and he was a prisoner of war of the North Koreans for 2 years. Not a very pleasant experience. But following Korea, he continued his Air Force flying career, and he flew combat missions in Vietnam. And his tour in Vietnam was just about up. And he found out there was going to be a difficult mission that was getting ready to be flown. And he was a colonel, and of course, colonels pulling the strings that colonels can pull. He got himself assigned to this particular mission. He knew that they would be needing experienced pilots. And he flew the mission, and his plane was hit and exploded. It either exploded or crashed somewhere on the coast of North Vietnam, and he went missing in action. So not only was he a POW, but he also went missing in action, you know, in Vietnam. And the museum, we found out about the story, and so we tried to contact, see if we could contact some relatives of Colonel Raglan, but we were unable to. So we decided that we, as the museum, will adopt Colonel Raglan, and we'll make sure that his story of heroism and courage and sacrifice would never be forgotten. And when we dedicated the building on May 1st, you were there providing the vocals. Thank you very much.
My privilege. It was my privilege, Paul.
There was some coverage. There was some local coverage on some of the radio and the TV stations. And the next day at work, a lady who I worked with came up and said that as a young teenager in Wisconsin, she had a MI bracelet that she wore during the Vietnam War, and she still had it. And she wanted to know, did we at the museum would like to have the bracelet? And we said, well, sure. And if we could, we'd try and get it back to the family. And so she brought in the bracelet the next day, and it on the name was Colonel Dayton Raglan. So, you know,
what are the chances of this?
We feel that there are angels definitely on our shoulders with this project. And so that was one of the reasons why we were wanting, you know, Colonel Raglan in the book as well, because it was just a special, special story. They're all special stories, but, you know, we're very, very proud that both Mike Blassie and Colonel Raglan are in the book.
I have a quick question for you regarding MIAs. Those who are missing in action, what is that count right now, roughly?
Well, I believe the count is, and I think it's somewhere over, including all of the conflicts from World War II, Vietnam, and up to date. I think the number is like over, oh, Kathy, don't get me lying. I want to say over 80,000 are in that neighborhood from all of the conflicts. Yeah. But I could be wrong. I know. I believe it's 70,000, 80,000.
Somewhere 000. In that ballpark.
But that's, you know, all of the conflicts when they, you know, World War I, World War II, and then Korea and the Vietnam and then on up, I believe.
Yeah. And that would not be, doesn't sound an exaggerated figure at all the last figures that I heard, which was a while ago. Yeah. But this book is just beautiful, and the interesting thing is, as you have the picture of Colonel Raglan literally climbing into the cockpit. It's very, very well illustrated, too. And maybe it's because of your background as a cartoonist that it's a simple and approachable kind of style that you have here. And many of the pictures of those who are in the concentration camps are done with muted grays and blues and that sort of thing, and it's a wonderful book. With this idea of marketing this primarily to middle school children, how are you distributing it? How is it being addressed in that regard? Or is it just simply family members who are buying it for their younger members?
Well, our contact list with the museum, we have sent out information about the book to all of the contacts, anyone who we've dealt with or anyone familiar with, with the museum. And of course, Elva Risa Publishing is promoting it, through, the publisher. Mm-hmm. And I guess my the brains of the operation over here might fill you in a little bit more.
Alrighty, well, let's turn to the brains over here. Bunny, the brains.
Yeah. I'm just, I just have that anxiety level that just makes me jump in and start doing.
That's my kind of girl.
The book with the keepsake jacket on it, the publisher was kind enough to make up that cover, and so that it tells a little bit about the museum. On the back of the cover, it has a picture of the museum, and Paul took the liberty to include his dad and Charlie Foley and Bill Kelm. Bill Kelm is one of our ex-POWs that is still alive, and we have a wonderful picture of him looking at the book and Paul pointing out that he was in the book. We took the book to his home at Christmas time, and that's certainly a reward that we're reaping from this. But basically what I did, I just started small. I just started sending out all my contacts in my contact book, you know, emailed
everyone.
Of whom
I was one.
Yeah. Yours was one, yes. And I thought, you know, now's not a time to be shy. Just send it to everybody.
And she said in there, I am so proud of Paul. Oh, yeah. And I can see why. It was Bunny getting the initiative, getting the ball rolling. Yeah. Once again, well, it's we women, you know, you guys.
Exactly.
I posted it on our Facebook page with the order form. We have to do it the old-fashioned way because we don't have, we have a website, but we don't have any online way of purchasing it. So it has to be done the old-fashioned way. You run off the order form and you mail it to our post office box number, and then we will mail you the book.
Okie doke. So I guess it'd be important for us to get that website address.
Yes.
What would that be?
Well, the Facebook page is, and I'm not sure if your radio station can link this to from your site, but it is the www.facebook.com/POW.MIA.museum. So that takes us to our Facebook page.
Got it.
If you do get to our website, there is a link to our Facebook page. So if you just Google Jefferson Barracks POW-MIA Museum, that will come up. But the Art of Farm is on there. And I also, I got even a little bit more blatant. I, for the first time ever, wrote a Christmas letter. I've never done that. But for people who didn't have emails that were our acquaintances, they got a Christmas letter from me with an order form included.
It. And by the way.
So that's what we've done. And then, of course, I had Paul send out to all of his contacts. And then we also asked, will you please share this on your Facebook page?
Yeah.
You know, so trying to do a little networking. So that's what we've done so far.
That's great. I find it an interesting thing, too, that the book was released on Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th. That's how perfect.
The book release dates, I think they probably are determined, you know, by the publishers and the production people, but I think they do try and release it on you know a day of note, and it happened on this particular occasion.
Well, it was not lost on me either that Elva Risa Publishing has concentrated on getting stories of heroism, stories of success out to people, and that's really what their specialty is as a publishing house. Am I correct in that understanding?
They're a small independent publisher. They're located in St. Paul, Minnesota, and that's their mission to make a positive difference in people's lives through books. And their primary imprint is to military families and the military community. Their name Elva Risa it's Swedish. Elva Risa means 11th journey, and I think comes from the proverb, fall 10 times, stand up 11, and so I think that's where the name comes from for their publishing company. So,
I thought it was probably the name of a person. I know. Now, I have another question about how did you select for the alphabet? And I'm sure you and Nancy Polite. Mm-hmm. Had a lot of discussions about this, but how did you select each designated letter of the alphabet?
Well, kind of brainstormed and came up with different topics for each letter, and then it was up to Nancy and the editors to kind of finally decide which one they wanted to use. Like, for instance, T. You know, it could be TAPS or it could be the TAP code. Decided on the TAP code. P could have been Pueblo or Prisoner of War. And so it just kind of come up with a variety of topics, you know, to fit that particular letter. And we wanted to include both, you know, the POW and the MIA. And, of course, that includes internment and then the sacrifice, the Gold Star Mothers and the KIA and that. So taking the letters and then just trying to assign, if you will, a topic or a subject to the particular letter, but making sure that it covered POWs and MIAs and interns and the internment story, and then the chaos, the sacrifices. And so in Nancy, I think she did an excellent job in collecting all of that information, because it's such a wide range of information, and then funneling it down to, you know, like the 26 letters in the alphabet. And I think she covered the POW MIA legacy very, very well, and, you know, and just using those letters. So did ask her about, wanted to use, you know, the Blassie page, wanted to use Mike Blassie, and wanted to use Colonel Ragland, and wanted to use the TAP code for the T page.
Yes.
But it was Nancy and the editors who finalized, you know, what particular subject, you know, would go with each letter.
So, very, very interesting. Yeah. And for G, Geneva Convention.
Convention, yeah. Well, and Q, came up with Q. That was a tough letter. And Nancy came up with quartermaster, but I'm thinking, okay, well, Q, quartermaster, that's military. But we were aware of a story of Peggy Greenwalt, who saved the flag at the fall of Bataan Corregidor, and when the fall of the Philippines, the 12th Quartermaster Regiment, the commander came to Peggy Greenwalt, a nurse, one of the nurses there, and he asked her to if she could possibly make sure that this doesn't fall into the hands of the Japanese. And of course she packed it away with her things, and when she was sent to Santo Tomas internment camp, the Japanese of course would inspect what she brought, and they found the flag, and so they wanted to know what that flag was, and then Peggy just told them, well, you know, oh, that's just a shawl. And so that was one, we think that's one of the only, you know, flags, American flags, regimental flags, that didn't fall into the hands of the Japanese at the fall of the Philippines, and thanks to a nurse who kind of you know, used her head and said it's just a shawl.
And said it was a shawl.
I think
that white lie is forgiven. And there is a depiction of her standing there with two gentlemen somewhat interrogating her, and she's wrapped within the flag. Paul Dillon, Bunny Dillon, what a delight to have you here. Let's give everybody the is the POW/MIA. Okay. Is that still a working address?
Still, yeah. And if it's okay, if they wanted to, they could just send $21.95. That's the shipping and handling. Or you could send it to Jefferson Barracks POW MIA Museum, PO Box 67, St. Charles, Missouri 63302. And if you would include you know, your mailing and your contact information, and we'll mail a copy or copies to you. You can also go to militaryfamilybooks.com and order a book from there, from Elvarisa. It would not have the special edition cover on it, or you could find them available. They'll be available at all the major bookstores too. Yeah.
But, all right. Now, I'm going to ask Bunny one more question. I know you told us all in your note originally. You're so proud of him. How has this experience, have you noticed anything different, or how has this enlightened
Paul? Well, you know,
talk about you.
It was almost 2 years out of our life that, but Paul, he did all the difficult task of laboring over that art table and at his computer. But I'm a feeler, and I felt all of his determination, all of his perseverance to complete each illustration with care and love. And now I look at that book, and boy, was it worth it.
Ah, yes, it was.
You know, and just seeing some of the faces of some of the POWs, some of the widows, that's something that that we get to see, Paul and I, because we're taking that to them, make sure they get their copies.
Wow.
And it's just precious. And then even others, you know, where they'll come back with stories that we didn't even know they were had any relation that with this involved. Mm. So we are reaping those benefits. So that was, you know, that was all worth it.
Well, and knowing you, I'm sure you're documenting these stories too, because that's kind of the kind of guy you are. You were about to say something, Paul.
Yeah, well, I couldn't have done it without Bunny's help. I just couldn't have done it, and that's the truth. I you know, that was 2 years, and I was probably not the most easy person to be around, you know, constantly trying to, you know, research, and so I could not have done it without her. That's and you know that just I just needed to say that. And one of the really neat things is, and I think Bunny touched on it, is when we get the book and we're able to bring it to a POW family, like to Bill Kelln, and it's kind of like, you know, giving the book to the person who gave us the stories, and just giving them the book, and that is that is rewarding. I just wish that there were more of them still with us. I know in this project, you know, we've lost so many of them in our World War II generation. Have practically all left us, you know. Yeah. And we're hoping that we could get that museum up and running so that they could see it.
But I think they were there for the dedication. We should inform our listeners that when they dedicated the museum, you had survivors from the Stalag 17B. That was an extraordinary experience.
Oh, wasn't it? Yeah.
These gentlemen and their close families being there. Most of them were gentlemen. And I think all of the ones that were there that day were gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Not that there weren't women POWs, but it was really extraordinary. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then all of our local, our St. Louis chapter, ex-POWs, and some even from around the state of Missouri and Illinois came over for it as well. And they mingled. I mean, this, you know, it's a brotherhood. They didn't know each other before, but boy, they just gravitate to each other.
And we had families, MIA families, who were there, which was so important for us, because we want them to know that, you know, that their loved ones are not forgotten. The family of, I guess it was Roger, Plasmire, Bernie Plasmire's widow. Bernie was a Marine A4 pilot who went missing in action at the southern end of the Oshawa Valley in 1970 or 72, and his widow was there. So it was just remarkable. And of course, Colonel John Clark was there. General Cassie Strom was there. You were there providing the vocals. I think that was just absolutely amazing. It was just an amazing day. And I think, Kathy, that's probably how we got the first Port Authority grant, because it was such a special day
with
everyone there. And it gave us an idea of what the museum is going to be when we get it, when it's finished. It's going to be an amazing place. I don't know that any of the families, the MI families, would have closure there, but at least they'll know that there'll be a place where every day
they'll be thought of.
Recognized. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. One more time, that address, if you would like to order this book, the old-fashioned way.
Okay, the old-fashioned way. If you, if you would send $21.95 to Jefferson Barracks POW MIA Museum, P.O. Box 67, St. Charles, Missouri, 63302. And again, please include your mailing and contact information so we can get it to you. And also, you can purchase the book online at militaryfamilybooks.com. And it will also be available from all the major booksellers in the area, too. So the money that the books sold through the museum, through our P.O. box number, all the funds, all the money we make from that book goes directly to the museum. Everything sold via our P.O. box number goes to the museum.
To the museum itself. That's tremendous. Thank you so much for being here. My guests again, Paul Dillon, who is the director of the POW MIA Museum at Jefferson Barracks, and his lovely bride, champion cheerleader, and, well, sweetheart.
Thank you so
much. His wife, Bunny. Thank you so much for being here. What could I use for playout music on this, I couldn't think of anything more appropriate than the Barber Adagio for strings, which, of course, many people first learned of through Platoon. But it is such a beautiful piece of music. And the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra is going to be playing this for us under the direction of Leonard Bernstein. Thank you both for being here.
You are so welcome.
Thank you, Kathy, for having us.
Oh, it's been a privilege having you here. the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra under Leonard Bernstein with Barber's Adagio for strings. And now, Deep River by Chanticleer.